Goodbye, Drum Gun, and more coming up on today's episode of The Latest in Tech News. Hello, and welcome to The Latest in Tech News. I'm your host, Taylor Merrick. This is the world's only 3-in-1 daily show on everything tech, gadgets, and gaming news. And if you're new here, welcome. Be sure you hit that follow button so that you can be notified when we go live. And feel free to chat with us during a live show. Love to hear your thoughts. And if you're listening via podcast, make sure you tap that subscribe button so that you don't miss out on the latest show. But do keep in mind that the podcast episodes are staggered. They come out about a day after this actual recording has been taking place. And yes, I mentioned live show. This is recorded daily as a live show in the evenings, Central Standard Time. So if you want information on that or to join us, head on over to mixer.com/TechNewsGadget. Finally, we are on Twitter at TechNewsGadget, where you can send us your questions, rants, or suggestions, both during or after the show. You can rant to Octavius, who is still thoroughly convinced, nobody's been able to convince him otherwise, that Twitter is a useful platform. He still thinks it's useless, and hence he decided to say that he only interacts with the people on the live show, in the chat room. And that's about as far as it goes. He had a little bit of an incident with Spider-Man yesterday. Hopefully that's been resolved now. For those of you having no idea what's going on, Octavius is my pet octopus. And he had a run-in with Spider-Man yesterday. There was a little bit of an altercation between the two of them. I think they have it sorted out. You have it sorted out? Mostly? Okay. Well, I don't know. You're the producer, so you see if he has permission. If he doesn't, figure out the procedure for that. If there's a guest form you have to fill out, and then segments for them to fill in on, or something. I don't know. You can figure that out, okay? You have, like, 8 legs. You can, like, multitask like no other. So I don't know. Figure it out. Well, right. Or you could make me do it. Why make me do it? Not making. So. Alright, well, be that as it may, Octavius is, I think, happy and content now. So, let's head on over to some trivia for today, guys. And I don't have the slides all set up, so I'm going to switch over to this one and hopefully get the live chat, if there is any, popping up on here. And I'll get the questions ready. Sound good? Got 3 questions today. And if you get it right, all the questions right, there is going to be a prize. Octavius has told me there will be a prize for those of you who guess all 3 trivia questions right. Now, keep in mind, cheating isn't supposed to happen. Just don't cheat. Don't use Google. Actually, think about it. And if you don't know, you could listen to some of my past shows where some trivia questions have appeared in the past. So, be that as it may, let's move on to the trivia, shall we? First question on the docket for those of you listening in a live chat room right now. Feel free to punch your answers into the chat box, and we shall see who the smartest one of them all is. Not me. It's definitely Octavius. He's cheating. Whatever. First question. Before becoming widely recognized as the main character of Super Mario Bros., what was Mario named? Was it A, Hammer Jump, B, Pop Guy, C, Bouncing Carpenter, or D, Jumpman? Be sure to punch in your answers into the chat, and we'll see if you get it right. You guys, a couple of seconds to come up with the answer. Don't go Googling all this stuff. You'll just take the fun out of it. Before becoming widely recognized as the main character of Super Mario Bros., what was Mario named? Was it A, Hammer Jump, B, Hop Guy, C, Bouncing Carpenter, or D, Jumpman? The correct answer is D, Jumpman. A little bit of a background. He was also created by Shigeru Miyamoto while he was developing Donkey Kong, which incidentally was supposed to be a game based on Popeye. Mario was first known as Mr. Video before ever appearing in the game. Miyamoto has gone on to say he's glad the name was changed, considering Nintendo's goal at the time was to create a character as popular as Pac-Man. Now, Donkey Kong shipped as an arcade in July 1981, with the main character being an unnamed carpenter in a Japanese version and Jumpman in the English instructions. As company lore goes, when Nintendo was localizing the game for U.S. audiences, then-president Minoru Arakawa got into a heated argument over property rent with Mario Segale, landlord of the company's American headquarters and inspiration for Mario's name, which first appeared in a Donkey Kong sales brochure that same year. According to a statement by Miyamoto at the Super Mario Bros. 30th Anniversary Festival in September of 2015, Mario's last name is also Mario. Yes, Mario. So, there you go. It's the first one. No, we don't want that one. This one. Do I want that one? No, I don't want that one. I'm trying to look for a good question for you. This is actually, this is a little bit of a... No, why are we getting the difficult ones? Okay, hang on just a second. It seems like we have to change stuff over here again. Okay, next question is, which of the following was not an x86 CPU maker? A little bit of a geeky question for you guys out there. Was it A, Motorola, B, IBM, C, VIA, or D, Cyrix? I'll repeat the question again. Which of the following was not an x86 CPU maker? We have to remember what in the world was going on at the time. Was it A, Motorola, B, IBM, C, VIA, or D, Cyrix? The correct answer is A, Motorola. Now, IBM was involved in the development of x86 systems since their inception, at some point designing and manufacturing x86 processors intended for PCs as well as embedded systems. Cyrix was a microprocessor developer founded in 1988. They specialized in math coprocessors for 286 and 386 microprocessors. IBM partnered with Cyrix to produce what would become their most notorious products, released around the Intel Pentium era. And Cyrix was acquired by National Semiconductor in 1997, later folding into one of Texas Instruments' divisions. But VIA was another active x86 CPU maker in the 1990s, specializing in low power solutions. But Motorola was one of the first semiconductor companies in the world with a rich history of microprocessors used in various applications, but never developed an x86 class processor for the PC market. Interesting. Final question for today. See if you guys get this one. The first 5 megabyte hard drive weighed approximately A, 25 pounds, B, over a ton, C, 50 pounds, or D, 250 pounds. Repeat that question again. I may have covered this in a previous show. The first 5 megabyte hard drive weighed approximately A, 25 pounds, B, over a ton, C, 50 pounds, or D, 250 pounds. The correct answer is B, over a ton. Shipped in September of 1956, the first 5 megabyte hard disk unit weighed over a ton and was used by the IBM 305 RAMAC, which was the first commercial computer to have a moving head hard disk. The drive occupied 16 square feet and used 50 24-inch platters read by two independently moving arms that had an average access time of 600 milliseconds. Yeah, I think I have covered this in the past. So, those of you wondering, I don't know if we have any winners for today's chat. But keep studying your trivia, and we'll see next time around if you win the coveted prize, that is. So, before we happen to move on to the tech news today, I just wanted to let you guys know that this show is brought to you by Tech News Gadget. you become an insider today, you can do that for only $9.95 a month or $99 annually, and that helps us keep this show growing for you. Insiders get exclusive access to the daily video archives along with their choice of an Octavius plush, as you can see this lady. He's like, yeah, buy a clone, or Insider's mug, and more. Right now, for a limited time, you can get a 10-day free trial of our monthly membership, no credit card required. Head on over to technewsgadget.net/insiders after the show to learn more. So, as you all are aware, or if you're new here, before we can cover the tech news of today, we kind of have to take a little bit of a step back. We have to find out what today happened in tech history, being that today is September 11th, 2018. On this day in 1985, the International Cometary Explorer passes through the gas tail of Comet P. Oh man, this name. Giacobini-Zinner, which was the first ever man-made object to pass through the tail of a comet. 1985. We're having fun chasing down comets. So, with that out of the way, we can head on over to the tech news for today. Let's see what we got on the lineup today. First on the docket, it's here! Finally, Qualcomm's new watch chip finally came out. But loyal Androidware users are dismayed that the first new Qualcomm silicon for smartwatches in 3 years uses ancient technology and won't offer the gains in performance they were hoping for. This comes to us from The Register. And it says that Qualcomm has launched its Snapdragon 3100 system on a chip for smartwatches, the first platform update since the 2100 in early 2016. Qualcomm had trailed the announcements by describing it as the first smartwatch chip built, quote, from the ground up, but it doesn't appear as radical as some had hoped. With Apple, Huawei, and Samsung moving to a 7-nanometer manufacturing process for their wearable chips, Snapdragon 3100 retains the 28-nanometer process used in the 2100. Qualcomm has also held on to the 32-bit quad-core A7-based design used in phones and wearables since 2011, though this is now augmented by a ultra-low-power co-processor, the Qualcomm QCC1100, allowing the display to operate while the four A7 cores are asleep. The new co-processor can also handle sensor I/O and GPS, offloading the work from the four A7 cores. Now, Qualcomm claimed that typical battery life use improvements ranging from 4 to 12 hours compared to the previous Snapdragon Wear 2100 platform, depending on display type, battery capacity, and device configurations, and that the sports mode should help a smartwatch last some 15 hours. Now, intensive use of GPS depletes the battery rapidly on any platform. Smartwatch users actively interact with their smartwatch only 5 to 10% of the day. The other 90 to 95% of the time, users simply expect the smartwatch to be on and always sensing. Qualcomm explained, justifying its design decision. So there should be a substantial power savings from this design, but not really any leaps in performance, which on the Java-based Wear OS has really never been that great. Unlike Samsung's Tizen and Apple's Watch OS, Google's Android is relatively inefficient, and the sluggish performance has been a bugbear of loyal owners for years. And, but perhaps Google's remaining Wear OS customers don't mind. They don't sell to techies. Google now targets Wear OS at high street fashion brands. Fossil, Louis Vuitton, and Montblanc promise to market watches based on the 3100. And if those customers are getting out of the gym without a flat watch, well, that's an improvement. A true side-by-side Wear and Watch OS comparison hasn't really been possible, as Apple Watch only works with Apple's own iPhone and not even iPad. No one expects Apple to make its Apple Watch compatible with Android, but I'm surprised it hasn't happened. But that may show Wear and the 3100 in a less than favorable light. So, yeah, I like the picture that they use for this article. It's the guy wearing a birthday hat, and he's at a birthday party, so he's got that birthday thing, and he doesn't look too thrilled. So for those of you who are expecting something more, oh great, it saves me time, or improved battery life, but it doesn't really give me a boost at all in performance. What's the trade-off here? I don't know. Maybe just don't buy it. Okay. Do what you want, but you have the news, so that now you're informed. Moving on, being that it's hurricane typhoon season and how some of my family is living on Guam, which is getting battered by a typhoon right now, well, US Today has come out with an article, well, actually, people living on the East Coast as well, about what to do if your smartphone gets wet, which I'll tell you the first step right now, don't turn it on. So let's read and find out what exactly we should do in this situation. Smartphones and water just don't mix, but when a hurricane hits, keeping a phone dry isn't always possible. Experts say even if the phone is drenched, there are steps you can take to recover it, but it takes patience and the ability to leave the phone alone. What kills a wet phone is electricity. Do not charge it. Do not plug it in to see if it works. If it's on, electricity will flow, it will touch the water that's inside, and that's when you fry the circuit board. It's also true even if your phone is still working after it was dropped in water. You also didn't get lucky there. Turn it off. You see a lot of people come in and say, I dropped it in water and pulled it out really fast and I figured I got lucky. And then the next day, the touch screen didn't work, said Craig Benke, co-founder of TechDry, which is a Denver, Colorado-based company that has sites nationwide where consumers can quickly get smart electronics dried out. But this guy knows what he's talking about. What actually happened is that it took a while for the water to reach sensitive connections inside the phone, and once it did, the water shorted them out. In a small number of cases, swamped phones are able to dry out on their own over the course of days or weeks, but it's not common. And while some newer phones are water resistant and can withstand a quick drop in a bucket or toilet, none are waterproof. So, here are a couple of tips. So for those of you taking notes, this is where you start taking notes. Drying on the counter is as fast as the rice treatment. Now, multiple websites suggest sticking electronics that have been submerged in liquid in a bag of uncooked rice to draw the water out, but that actually doesn't work and can introduce dust and starch into the phone as well, according to Ubanki. We did a study and the rice was slower to work than just leaving the phone out on the counter, and neither worked fast enough. After about 48 hours in rice, only 13% of the water came out of the phone. By the time the phone had fully dried out, corrosion will have had time to damage the delicate electronics inside. The preferred method to safely dry phones is to boil off the water inside them at a low temperature under a vacuum. In vacuum drying, the items are placed in a chamber slightly smaller than a shoebox and then put under a vacuum while being heated. The lower the pressure, the lower the temperature at which water boils, and then the machine allows the water inside the phone to boil off at temperatures that won't damage your components. And usually have that done in about 30 minutes. Companies that offer this kind of service also do car key fobs, hearing aids, fitness trackers, and TV remotes. So for those who can't get somewhere to have their phone professionally dried immediately, we still have some hope for you guys. In San Francisco, people would bring in phones that had stopped working after being sent through a washer and didn't bring them in for 6 months, figuring they were dead and gone. So what some people did is they opened it up, dried it, cleaned it, and a couple of cases got them working again. Now, ocean water is a different story. Plain water or even toilet or flood water is bad enough, but salt water is another thing entirely, according to experts. Salt in ocean water is strongly corrosive to electronics and can damage a phone much more quickly. Now, if your phone gets wet with ocean water, the first thing you need to do is rinse it out. And now, it might seem kind of counterintuitive, but you gotta get the salt out. If the salt stays in the phone, it can corrode out in as little as a day. As soon as you have access to fresh water, rinse the phone with warm water to flush as much of the salt water out as possible. And of course, don't turn it on until the phone is dried out. Now you can do these two things before the storm hits. In Hawaii, as Hurricane Lane was bearing down on the islands, many first responders made sure to grab a stash of sandwich-sized resealable plastic bags and keep them in a pocket or bag. Once it started raining, they would put their phone in one of those bags, push the air out, and zip it up, holding the resulting bundle together with a rubber band. This, they explained, was a low-tech waterproof covering for their phones. They still had to take the phone out when making a call, but if they had to wade through water or got soaked in the rain, they had some hope of keeping their smartphone dry. It is by no means accident-proof, but it's better than nothing and a technique you can use your bicycling around on days it might rain as well. The second must do is to write down on paper, or better yet, memorize a few crucial phone numbers. We learned from Hurricane Harvey that most people nowadays don't have any phone numbers memorized, so if they get into trouble and their phone's not working, they have no way of getting in touch with anybody. Isn't that great? It just says name. It never says phone number underneath it. Thanks, Apple. So be sure to write down a few important phone numbers such as family or work well before the storm hits to keep the paper on hand or someplace where it won't get wet or accessible. That you won't have to worry about it. Or you can just memorize them and you can't lose that. So there you have it with hurricane and typhoon season going on. A couple of low-tech ways to keep your phone safe and actually make sure it dries out and in case it does. And steps to use accordingly. So if you didn't know that before, now you know. Moving on, Spider-Man is getting a new Game Plus update. Of course, here's Spider-Man news again. Spider-Man has been out for a mere 5 days already. I know, it's like nonstop. You've been hearing about this. Actually, I've only talked about it twice. It just came out over the weekend. But many enthusiasts have speedily completed the game and are hungry for more. How in the world did he even have a life afterwards? I don't. Anyways, this article then goes on to say, fans will soon be able to swing back into action with some new challenges, as Insomniac has announced a new Game Plus update is in the pipelines. The news spread across the website after Insomniac replied to a fan's question on Twitter. Now, there isn't a solid release date yet, but it sounds like it's currently in the final stages of production. New Game Plus modes typically provide extra challenges to give games added replayability. God of War's recent New Game Plus update, for instance, made endgame weapons available from the start, but enemies more challenging to deal with from the get-go. We don't yet know exactly what Insomniac has in store for Spider-Man's new game update, but it's likely to be along those lines. But one thing is certain, if you found your first playthrough to be a walk in the park, or get it? The New Game Plus mode will provide something different for your second time around. This latest announcement comes in the wake of recent news that Spider-Man is the fastest-selling game of the year so far in the UK. With a new game mode plus on its way, it seems Spider-Man is set to stay in the limelight for some time to come. Until obviously it gets unset by Assassin's Creed or Call of Duty or heaven forbid, Battlefield 5 actually figures out all of its bugs in beta that it should have solved in alpha and goes, just kidding guys, we're going to launch right around Halloween.
Wait, please get out all the bugs. AAA developer team.
Why can't you get it right the first time? Goodness, you listen to you guys, you have so much feedback to use, and then you go, I didn't know I was supposed to do any of that. And it's like, well, yeah. But money. Yes, money. That'll do it every single time. Moving on to the final article of today. We have some sad news for you Fortnite players. I wish I had some sad music to play, but I don't. Just pretend that you hear that sad violin music playing in the background. One of the most powerful Fortnite guns is no more. This article comes to us from Engadget. By the way, you can find the articles for this and all the other past shows in the show notes over at technewsgadget.net. Moving on. As much as we liked the drum gun, the end of that era, Fortnite. But not that some players will necessarily mind. As part of a relatively minor update, Epic Games has quietly vaulted or retired the drum gun. While the weapon has only been available since July, it caused no small amount of havoc when it premiered. Its 50-round capacity and high rate of fire meant that you could not only take out multiple opponents, and certainly unshielded ones, with a single magazine for starters. It could also create misery for anyone building a structure, since you could easily unload on someone's wall and still have ammo to finish off your opponent. And did we mention it was relatively easy to find? Now, Epic did tone down the gun for Season 5, but that just kind of called back enthusiasm, and it's no wonder the company is taking the weapon out of service. We wouldn't rule out Epic reviving the drum gun when it finds a better balance like it did with guided missiles. Now, you'll have some compensation as it is. The same update introduces a suppressed assault rifle that focuses on precision and stealth. It's the polar opposite of the drum gun in that regard, but that could make it ideal for taking out opponents at moderate distances out tipping off nearby rivals. Epic is still determined to add some variety to Fortnite, even if it requires some course corrections. Obviously, as any game maker is intending to do, keep people interested, keep them coming back, keep them playing, and bring more people in is always good for business. So, with that being said, that wraps up all of the tech articles that we have or today. And if we, by chance, happen to miss anything that you wanted to hear about today, or there's something that you want us to keep you informed on, hey, let us know. You can do that in the chat room. You can let us know on Twitter, at TechNewsGadget, or you can email us, TechNewsGadget@gmail.com. That'll wrap it up for today's show. This has been the latest in tech news. I am your host, Taylor Merrick. That's Octavius over there. He's a
pet octopus, but he's stuffed. Oh, I wasn't supposed to say that.
I'm going to get yelled at later. The show is a production of Tech News Gadget. For the latest in tech, gadgets, and gaming news, guys, be sure to head on over to Tech News Gadget. Pretty much, keep being awesome, and I'll see you on the flip side.